Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi there, I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. Today on Squawk Pod, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. We're talking JetBlue's hostile bid for Spirit Airlines and Jeff Bezos's pointed tweets at Biden.
The president's theory of the case when it comes to economics is probably never going to be wildly popular with billionaires for the simple reason that he is calling on them to pay their fair share.
Intel's shareholders are speaking up about salaries in the C-suite, and appetite for air travel is back on the rise.
I was moaning and groaning yesterday, Andrew, to you guys, the commercial breaks about airfares.
Yep.
But people are paying them.
Those stories, plus the other corporate drama this week and most weeks, Elon Musk's bid for Twitter making news again.
It's like a drama. It's like a great book.
It's Tuesday, May 17th, 2022, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin and Brian Sullivan. Joe is off again today.
Another drama. Elon Musk said that his $44 billion purchase of Twitter will not move ahead until he has more clarity on how many fake accounts are out there. He responded to a post earlier this morning that said, quote, Musk may be looking for a better deal, as $44 billion seems too high, with 20% of users being fake or spam accounts. Musk wrote in response, 20% fake spam accounts, while four times what Twitter claims, could be much higher. My offer was based on Twitter's SEC filing being accurate. Yesterday, Twitter CEO publicly refused to show proof of less than 5%. This deal cannot move forward until he does. A spokesman for Twitter did not immediately respond to a CNBC request for comment. So
the negotiation is taking place on Twitter.
The whole thing is taking place on Twitter. And the question, I mean, look, I just don't know whether you think that Twitter has been running a fraud. You basically either have to decide that Twitter's been running a fraud for possibly a decade or longer, or that Elon Musk...
Well, it's not a fraud. It's not their fault that these bots sign up.
No. But they file SEC filings saying that they have less than 5% of their users.
The SEC filings also say they could be wrong, that the numbers could be higher.
But the other piece of it, and the reason why I would argue to you it is a fraud, if in fact this is the case, is you have advertisers who are clearly buying against the audience. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk made the point yesterday that effectively when you think about who the advertiser is, these are brand advertisements. These are not typically click-through, buy the product, sort of DTC, direct-to-consumer advertising. So you're trying to create an image. It's an image campaign. If the people that you're, quote-unquote, advertising your image to don't exist, that's a problem.
But does anybody think...
And so the question is either that, in which case... By the way, if we think the SEC should go after Elon Musk for what he's doing, you want the SEC to go after them and maybe the FTC too, or this is part of some grand, terrible, and maybe even evil negotiation. Which is it?
Well, I think also, what is a bot, right? What is a fake account? What I mean by that is, what if it's somebody that was real, is a real human being, all of you out there, hi, thanks for tuning in, but just gave up on it. But they never deleted their account, and it just kind of sits there.
Or maybe they log in. What if it's somebody who has 12 or 20
or 1,000
accounts?
Maybe they log in once a year. If
that's
when
not
he
what we're
came
talking
out
about.
With that 5% number, I thought, well, that's incredibly low. And I'm not. This is just my opinion here, but
it's not his number; it's their number.
The SEC. I mean, it's
Twitter. The Twitter number.
I get that.
Yeah.
But people have asked me in the past about Twitter because most people in America are not on Twitter. It's kind of a media thing. I would say that if my personal take, I would think it was more than 5%. I would say 40%.
I don't know if it's 40%.
They used to have this thing called Twitter audit, and you could run
right,
that.
Right, you could see who's your real follower.
60% were inactive or whatever. I mean, huge numbers.
In any event, here he is, and the question is, does he drop the deal? Does he recut
the
deal?
Well, the market says yes. Twitter fell 8% yesterday. It's down 3% in the pre-market right now.
Well, they're saying he's dropping the deal at the former price. The question is, does he take the deal at a much lower price? And I think he'd be very happy to take it at a lower price. Maybe. We'll see.
Could you ever see, Andrew, Google being interested in a Twitter? I know there's antitrust issues. I'm just throwing that out there as a hypothetical.
The issue,
because their Google Plus failed. They've never succeeded
right,
in social.
I think the answer is no, but the other issue is the prices. At the premium that Elon was offering before made no sense to any rational economic buyer. So, yes, if the price were to come down to some, you know, irrationally low level or even rational level, then I think you might find
lots of
buyers.
Should we do a Twitter poll? Should we say, would you charge? Would you pay, Becky?
You're going to ask the bots?
The bots will say no.
Yeah.
They won't pay. Would you pay for Twitter?
I pay for Twitter already.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I'm on the blue.
The blue thing. What does that call it? Like $2 a month?
$3 a month, I think. $2.99 a month.
Would you pay $50 a year for Twitter? $100?
If it was clean, on the service.
No anonymity.
Oh, well, but he's not providing that, by the way. He's not even offering that.
What I'm doing right now? It's 6:10 in the morning.
Yeah, no, I know.
Stirring the pot.
But Elon Musk isn't trying to do that. Elon Musk, if he's going to charge, I think he would charge. He might charge NBC Universal or CNBC. Maybe he would charge people, quote unquote, personalities. I don't know. But I don't think his plan is to charge more broadly than that.
He's made
that pretty clear. So
do like a cameo. You could get like a private 10 minutes with Andrew Ross. You know, I don't know. There's ideas. I think maybe he's got some ideas.
I think you need to start an OnlyFans, my friend.
Keep your clothes on.
Nobody wants to see that. No, I mean, that's a negative value right there in my case. We got a whale. It's washed up on shore in Seaside Heights. Could be a good day for the overall stock market. Dow futures up nearly 500. United, a part of that story, not of the Dow, but of a stock that is higher this morning. Company raising its second quarter outlook, citing strength in travel demand. It expects so-called revenue per available seat mile, the old RevPAR, to be up 23% to 25% from 2019's levels. That is from a prior forecast of 17%. I was moaning and groaning yesterday, Andrew, to you guys in the commercial breaks about airfares.
Yep.
But people are paying them. The planes are full.
People are paying them. Let's see how long that lasts.
Like a lot of money.
That's the question.
I get the feeling that is going to stick around for a while. It's pretty sticky, and they probably have a pretty good idea of who's booking out for a while on some of these things, too. And now it could change. We heard yesterday from Ryanair's CFO, their big concern is what happens if COVID comes back in a big way during the holidays. Does that kind of bring things down again? But, you know, for now, things look really strong.
Intel shareholders have voted against the company's compensation plan for its top executives. That's according to new regulatory filing. The vote is advisory. It won't immediately affect compensation, but it does signal that Intel investors are closely watching the performance of the company's CEO, Pat Gelsinger, and the progress of his turnaround plan. He took over as CEO in February of 2021 and received a pay package of $178 million. Later that year, that included more than $170 million in stock and option awards. The actual payout of those awards, of course, depends on the stock's performance. He won't receive any of it if the stock trades lower than when he took over.
That's binding, right? Or is it not?
Which?
The shareholder vote?
It's an advisory.
Advisory,
so it's not binding.
Mm. All right.
Tease will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, JetBlue's hostile takeover bid for Spirit Airlines. Whether it'll go through and whether it should, with Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
The most important thing is to make sure that the American people are served well by a healthy airline sector. And part of a healthy airline sector is healthy competition.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big?
Ooh.
Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, click, click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod, today with Becky Quick, Andrew Ross Sorkin, and Brian Sullivan. Here's Andrew.
Just reading the Twitter proxy background material.
As one does.
Drama. It's like a drama. It really is. It's like a great book. Anyway.
Twitter, by the way, responding to Elon Musk.
Starts on page 41, if you really want to read the drama.
A drama indeed, and Elon Musk is not the only drama on Wall Street these days. This week, JetBlue launched a hostile takeover bid for Spirit Airlines, heating up the battle between JetBlue and Frontier for discount carrier Spirit. Part of the intrigue? A battle of the boards. The other part? Whether any of it is even worth the trouble, or if regulators will get in the way. Here's Andrew.
JetBlue launching a hostile takeover bid for Spirit Airlines. Spirit already doing a merger with Frontier Airlines. But today, JetBlue told Spirit shareholders it was offering $30 per share. Could go to $33. And we're lucky to have the U.S. Transportation Secretary with us this morning. Want to ask Secretary Pete Buttigieg about this and so much more that's been taking place in our country. Secretary Buttigieg, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. Curious what your thoughts are about consolidation in the airline industry at this point, given how much consolidation there's already been, and whether you think a transaction like this would be approved.
Well, I can't weigh in, obviously, on DOJ's process of approval. What I will say is that as they undertake that process, we'll make sure to inform it with all of the technical support we can from my department. Look, the most important thing is to make sure that the American people are served well by a healthy airline sector. And part of a healthy airline sector, part of any healthy sector in our economy, is healthy competition. That needs to be demonstrated, that this wouldn't have a negative effect on competition in order to meet those legal hurdles. We'll see how the process plays out.
Mr. Secretary, but explain this in just in terms of how you weigh it at this point. This administration has talked a lot about competitive concerns actually leading to inflation in this country, right? Like that's one of the issues that you have raised over and over again. So when you look at a transaction, how much is it today about the competition piece versus you said you also want a healthy industry, and also that there's advocates for transactions like this would say that making the industry healthier would mean making the companies healthier. How do you see
both
sides of that?
Again, it's for the it's for the DOJ to evaluate the antitrust side. I mean, it is interesting, at the time of airline deregulation, I don't think anybody thought that the concentration would build up the way that it has. Where you draw the line is where the DOJ comes in. But also, my department has an energized consumer protection team and department. We've taken a lot of actions recently on things like refunds and airlines that didn't come through with the refunds that they were required to offer to customers were held accountable. So we're going to make sure whatever the sectoral industry structure is in terms of how many companies you've got, we're going to do everything we can, first and foremost, of course, to make sure that air travel in this country is safe. And
what do you think about pricing
right now?
And also to
exercise all of our consumer protection authorities.
I know you've been talking a lot about inflation. One place that there's been a ton of it is in the pricing of airfare.
That's right. We are seeing that one of many areas where there's a lot of upward pressure on prices, some of it associated, of course, with fuel. But that doesn't appear to be enough to account for everything that we've seen. Look, part of what we've seen happen, and this is true whether you're talking about airlines or whether you're talking about the freight rail sector, is there was a lot of thinning out of the workforce. And now that's come back around as a labor supply issue. You see a lot of airlines that haven't been able to get the staffing levels up to meet or match demand. On the freight rail side, this is a real concern because thousands of workers were removed from the workforce there. And now we're seeing our freight operators struggling to keep up, which is one part of the supply chain puzzle right now.
Mr. Secretary, earlier today, we had the CFO of Ryanair on. The company has been pretty unhappy with the lack of deliveries coming from Boeing. In fact, the CEO today was making comments on their conference call saying that Boeing needs a management reboot in Seattle, and either the existing management needs to up its game or they need to change the existing management. He said that they think Boeing management is running around like headless chickens, in his words. It's got to be pretty concerning when you realize Boeing is so important to the American economy, and this is basically two players in the game, either Boeing or Airbus. What can you tell us about the situation at Boeing right now?
Well, look, from our department's perspective, the most important thing as a regulator is making sure their aircraft are safe and working to ensure that there's total confidence in the safety of an aircraft flown by any airline or made by any manufacturer that's going to be flown in U.S. airspace. And that's been really our focus. How a company is doing in terms of satisfying their customers, once it goes beyond those safety considerations that we regulate, that's a private concern, but of course one that we follow very closely given how many jobs are at stake. We want and need for there to be an excellent, thriving, robust U.S. aviation manufacturing sector, whether we're talking about parts and equipment or whether we're talking about aircraft themselves. Certainly something where we are seeking for all of our U.S.-based companies to succeed.
Secretary Buttigieg, Brian Sullivan, we're talking about electric cars here around the table in the commercial break. We all admit they're fast, they're fun, they're awesome in many ways, but they don't pay gas tax. States do. There are some state registration fees. They try to figure it out. The roads, I don't know if last time you drove up the New Jersey Turnpike, but bring a ladder with you, because if you go into one of the potholes, you might need the ladder to come out. What are we working on as far as federal taxes on EVs? Because particularly electric cars are heavy. They got a lot of torque. They actually tear up the roads. They need to contribute as well. What can we do and what can we expect around that?
Well, look, if you look at the big picture, EVs also have fewer costs socially and kind of writ large for the country, because you have, for example, Medicaid not having to pay the bills for people who get asthma from particulate matter coming out of tailpipes. There is a big, complicated and intricate picture here. But you're right. Traditionally, we have funded our roads with the gas tax. That being said, let's be honest. It's been a long time since any given year's gas tax receipts have covered the expense of maintaining our roads. And there are a lot of other ways to fund our infrastructure. Remember, the president laid out at the outset of this infrastructure law, which we're celebrating the six-month mark of today, that not one penny of it would be collected from people making $400,000 a year or less, because he believes that anybody making $400,000 or less is already paying more than enough in federal taxes. So we found other ways to fund that infrastructure. And that's what America is going to have to do going forward as we see an increase in our vehicle mix away from those gas engines. But again, as we saw 6 months ago this week when the president on the South Lawn signed a historic, epic infrastructure law into being, which we are now working to implement, getting the funding out for new roads, bridges, airports, rail, and more. Matter of fact, today we're announcing another $1 billion going to the Safe Streets and Roads for All program. That's going to help communities that are trying to make their roads and streets safer. There are many ways to get that funded. Congress has provided for that on this round, and I have no doubt, however we get there, that'll happen for the future too, because we have to.
Secretary Buttigieg, we also want to continue that conversation about infrastructure with you. And I want to ask you about this, though. Even though a lot of people agree that that law was badly needed, it still represents a kind of government spending that many have blamed for high inflation. And I want to show the audience some tweets over the weekend, which you probably saw as well, from Jeff Bezos, who weighed in on inflation after President Biden sounded off about it. Here's what the president wrote Friday evening. He said, "You want to bring down inflation? Let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share." Late that night, Bezos responded, "The newly created Department of Homeland Security disinformation boards should review this tweet, or maybe they need need to form a new non-sequitur board. Instead, raising corporate taxes is fine to discuss. Taming inflation is critical to discuss. Mushing them together is just misdirection." Yesterday, in response to one Twitter user who said that the Biden administration doesn't deserve any credit for lowering the nation's deficit, Bezos tweeted, "In fact, the administration tried hard to inject even more stimulus into an already overheated inflationary economy, and only Manchin saved them from themselves. Inflation is a regressive tax that most hurts the least affluent. Misdirection doesn't help the country." What do you think of that analysis?
Look, the president's theory of the case when it comes to economics is probably never going to be wildly popular with billionaires for the simple reason that he is calling on them to pay their fair share. Of course, there's a lot to what goes into fighting inflation. But the point is that with the right kind of public investments, we can go after some of the things that we know are contributing to inflationary pressures, whether it's the infrastructure issues that have put a pinch on our supply chain or the childcare issues that have been a major labor supply constraint because they keep a lot of working parents, particularly a lot of women, out of the workforce. That is why so many Nobel Prize winning economists took a look at the president's fiscal agenda, said this is going to ease, not worsen inflationary pressures. Now, I will concede that the issues we're having in the economy now are the kind of issues you often see when there is a lot of demand, when unemployment is very low. And the president took swift action to make sure that unemployment would be low, creating more jobs, millions of jobs, in his first year in office than any president ever had in their first year in office. Now we're dealing with the set of issues that you have to stay on top of when you have high demand, a lot of people with a lot of income in their pockets, and a tight labor supply because so many people are working. And those are real issues, and those are the issues that we're
Mr. Secretary, the president's agenda will help. On the corporate tax front, and look, I've talked about how you could raise corporate taxes from where they are today. So we're not so far off here. But do you not agree that these are two different issues? Meaning, if you change corporate taxes, yes, in the immediate term, maybe it will have some impact on inflation. But corporate tax is a long-term issue. You either deal with it because you think it's the right thing to do or it's the wrong thing to do, not because you're trying to deal with inflation right this second.
Well, a lot of it is what you're going to do with the revenue. And again, we have an agenda to use tax revenue on things that are going to ease inflationary pressures. But also, we have a very clear contrast right now, right? You have Senate Republican proposals that are about raising taxes on the poor and the middle class. And you have the president's worldview, which is shared by the majority of Americans, that if anybody needs to be carrying more of the load right now, it is the wealthiest and corporations that have become extremely profitable.
But
the way,
corporations
also that have this is really important. Corporations that have invoked inflation as an excuse to keep prices high in ways that are not just reflected by the supply picture and are pocketing the difference.
We are going to leave the conversation there. It is a much longer debate. Mr. Secretary, we love having you on the broadcast and hope you'll come on back so we can continue it. Thank you.
That's the podcast for today. Thanks for listening, as always. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. You should probably also follow us on Twitter at @SquawkCNBC. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.